empowered to participate in the pastimes of Krishna, and he's been given pure devotion and he's merged into the form of Nanda Maharaj in the material world. And he's given an opportunity to participate in the pastimes.
But that doesn't, that's correct. What you didn't answer is, how do the terms Pratibimba and Pratichaya apply?
The reflection is, the Chaya doesn't have all the qualities of the original.
Nor does the Bimba. So who is it? Nanda Maharaj in Goloka Vrindavan expands as what? Or who?
As Drona in
No. Sri Nanda in Vaikuntha, eternal associate of Lord Narayan. And that's in the category of Pratibimba or Pratichaya?
Pratibimba.
Pratibimba. The mirror reflection, mirror-like, or the reflection of Nanda in Goloka Vrindavan. And then Sri Nanda in Narayan expands as Drona Vasu in the Swarga realm, which is Pratichaya. And then Drona, Vasu Drona gets a special benediction. Who gave him that benediction? Did it say who gave him the benediction? Huh?
Brahma.
Brahma gave him a benediction. You can go to the spirit material world and experience Krishna's pastimes in a state of pure devotion. Blessings upon you. And so he merges with the form of Nanda Maharaj in Krishna's Boma Leela. The Nanda Maharaj who is in Krishna's Boma Leela. And then he gives other examples. Can anybody remember any of those other examples?
Sridham.
Let's just see if anybody else was enthusiastic to participate. There are some other examples. Okay, go ahead.
Sridham, he expands as Garuda in the Vaikuntha planets.
Garuda in the Vaikuntha planets. Okay. And then?
And demigods, I do not know what to
Vasudeva and Devaki as Sashyapa and Aditi in Swarga.
Yeah.
Sutapa and Prishni.
Sutapa and Prishni in the Vaikuntha realm. And Aditi and Kashyapa in the Deva realm. And then as Vasudeva and Devaki again here. In the mortal realm. Sridham, Garuda, Lord Balaram expands as Anantashesh, and then in the heavenly region. I don't recall. Should I look it up? I lose my space here. This is text. I'll see if I can find it quickly. Oh. While I'm looking, and then after he describes all of that, then what comes? How does that narration go? Well, there's a very important part in all this. The happiness of the residents of Ayodhya, Dwaraka, and other special abodes is said to be even greater than the happiness of the heavenly planets because of the various, but the Vaikuntha planets because of the special tastes. But the happiness in Gokula is superior. Okay, then there's eternal associates and all that. Okay. The Kaliya serpent, someone can narrate the drift of how that goes. Would you like to describe that by heart?
Krishna finds out that Kaliya is back. He quickly goes back before anybody can stop him, before anybody knows about, because he feels they are trying to stop him, and he goes into the river Yamuna. Then he actually rides Kaliya like a horse. And in the meantime,
what does he use for the rope? Garments.
The shawls of all his wives.
The shawls of his wives, ties together his rope, puts it through his nose with his left hand, holds the flute with his right hand, and giddy up horsey. Yeah, he rides around for a while.
And in the meantime, when you find out that Krishna is the same thing, everybody was searching for him, and when they find him over there, then they go through various stages of distress. And finally, Krishna gets the gopis also on the boat.
But before that happens, what does Balaram do? Yeah?
This can't be true,
this can't be true,
and he has to call down his mother.
But
he's the last person to get there.
Yeah.
Because everyone ran, so he has to call
her
down and
understand. And then? But he calls out to Krishna and says, what does he say to Krishna? Well, he's in the coils.
Yeah. These are not your devotees who are in the, they are out in Ayodhya, not the devotees in Vaikuntha. These are the gopis, these are the Vrajavasis.
And what's special about them?
The other devotees can take shelter of some understanding of your omnipotence and omnipresence, but they do not know anything other than you. So they
so stop this play. They'll die. So Krishna hears the words of Balaram, and he bursts out of the coils of the Kaliya serpent. He flattens the hoods of the Kaliya serpent to make a nice dancing platform. Bring the gopis up and do rasa dance right on the hoods of Kaliya serpent. So there was then that ends where we ended, and then he starts to tell about Keshi and Arista. But there was a nice, very important discussion about how another topic about humility and what was being said about humility and comparing the gopas and the gopis and what's the general feeling. There's a pervasive feeling amongst the millions and millions of cowherds, and that's from the children, young, elders. There's one common mood amongst all of them. What is that?
That Krishna is reciprocating with me the most.
Yeah. Just putting it the other way around. I alone am most dear to Krishna. Oh, Krishna is reciprocating with me the most. And what's the distinction made about the gopis? Someone else? Well, how was the gopis' mood? We discussed this at the end, so what did you say? You forget it? Put it in my words.
That they never feel qualified.
And therefore they're always striving to make themselves more qualified and present service to Krishna in a more pleasing manner. And he made a, well, he made a comparison. This was your question. The comparison was what? Between their humility and the mother of that humility, which is
Lobha.
Yeah, the thirst for their love, or lobha, greed. Trishna is the mother of Dainya. And in turn, Sarup says it is obvious how much Krishna always has great love, compassion, and attachment for each of the millions and millions of gopis. And he says that from this evidence, even persons like myself can deduce in hundreds of logical ways that there is no one else, even living in the same abode, who is as dear to him as they are. And without mentioning Radha's name, he says, when Krishna exhibits special love for one of the gopis, however, then it is apparent that she, with a capital S, is the most extremely dear to him. But although all of these gopis are constantly experiencing the consecutive flow of Krishna's pleasure pastime, still none of them imagines that Krishna has special love for her. Each of them thinks like this: oh, when will I be fortunate enough to become even the lowliest maidservant of Krishna? My Lord, these devotees' intent absorption in the fathomless rasa of pure love for you is indeed amazing. The exalted nature of this absorption is a very deep matter to consider, incomprehensible by even the greatest sages. And then just with that, he switches to the Kaliya Leela and concludes. Yeah. So while Krishna is dancing with the gopis in rasa dance on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent, there's a big band, a big concert going on to enhance the dancing. Then Krishna dismounts Kaliya. The serpent's very, very happy because Krishna was dancing on his hoods and he was receiving so many favors and benedictions that even Garuda, his arch rival, could hardly ever receive. Totally satisfied by the charming festival of music, song, and so on, raised by the multitude of cowherd men and women, out of sheer spontaneous joy, Krishna returned to his herder's village. Then, this is where we left off. Once the two great demons, Keshi and Arishta, came, they were favorite servants of the wicked Kamsa, comma, external representatives of Kamsa's life heir. No commentary. The first of these two assumed the form of a huge horse, while the other took the form of a bull. They terrified the cowherds, trampling the land of Gokula. The vast bodies of both of them touched the sky. Their roaring made all living beings fall to the ground. The two entered the cowherd village simultaneously. Purport or commentary. The pastimes of subduing Kaliya involved the combined rasas of pathos and heroism, while the next pastime recounted as one of pure heroism, vira rasa. In this instance, the two famous demons, Keshi and Arishta arrived in Vraja simultaneously. They terrified Gokula and more specifically harassed the herds of cows, Gokula, trampling them with their heavy feet. The animal bodies of these two friends of Kamsa assumed were much bigger than ordinary size. Continuing, although his frightened loved ones tried to stop him, pulling him back with all their might, Krishna gave them assurances to show his heroic courage. He slapped his arm with his hand. Then he went forward. Commentary, the coward men and women were all terrified by he kicked far away with a swift kick of his leg. Next he found the bull. He pierced a hole in Arishta's nose, tied him, and brought him before Lord Gopishwara Shiva. Commentary, since horses generally travel faster than bulls, Krishna encountered Keshi first. He kicked the horse demon so far away that it was doubtful he would ever come back. Krishna then subdued Arishta and offered him to Sri Gopishwara, the famous Shiva Linga in the Vrindavan forest. In other words, Arishta was blessed to become the Nandi bull who would sit forever in front of Gopishwara Mahadev. Did we visit Gopishwara Mahadev?
Yes.
Where?
Yes, going towards the Delhi
Madras. Going towards the?
Delhi Madras road.
It's between Gopinath and Ramsi Bhat.
Okay. We went to so many places. Continuing, the horse, Keshi, then came back. But powerful Krishna, whose valorous endeavors are never thwarted, jumped up and vigorously mounted him. Teaching the horse a number of movements, he displayed his glories by completely taming him. Commentary, how could Krishna have brought Arishta to Gopishwara and then return so quickly to meet Keshi? Because he is, now it says Amanda, and it's probably supposed to be Ananda, Vikrama, anything but slow. His abilities are unbounded. Again, Krishna had thousands of his friends mount the horse also. With his swift hand, he enjoyed making the horse jump in various ways, roaming both on the earth and in the sky. Thus he took his pleasure. In a very short time he brought the horse under his control. Tying him up with ropes, he kept him within the cowherd village for the entertainment of riding him. The bull he kept also for pulling carts. While Krishna was living in the town of Nandishwara, one day a Krura came on Kamsa's order to take him from Braj to Madhupuri. Commentary, the next pastime is one of pure pathos, extreme pathos, Karuna Rasa. Its description begins in this verse and continues up, goes for another 80 verses. Kuras gets a lot of headlines here. In Goloka, as well as on the earth, Nandishwara Hill is, where is Nandishwara Hill? Huh? House of Nanda Maharaj is up on Nandishwara Hill. The other Vrindavan pastimes related by Sri Sarup happened mostly in the forests, but on this occasion Krishna was at home in Nandagram. Continuing the translation. If even stones, logs, and other inert objects from other places hear what happened in Braj at that time, they also begin crying and shatter into pieces. You have a front row seat right here. Look at this. Look at this. Come over here. Commentary. We have already heard about the exceptional ecstatic symptoms of the trees and rocks of Vrindavan. But now we are told that even the objects outside Krishna's abode are seriously affected by hearing the pastimes of Akuras removing Krishna. I don't know if everyone heard this morning or whatever time of day it was. The tear kadamba under which Rupa Goswami sat when he was writing and in the mood of feelings of separation between Radha and Krishna, the leaves of the trees would all fall off the tree. And then when he was writing about the meeting of Radha and Krishna, the leaves would sprout new little buds, new leaves would form, little flowers would come, the tree would be in ecstasy in the mood of Radha and Krishna meeting. So here, in the mood of the gopis' feelings of separation from Krishna, the trees, even the dead logs and stones would cry and shatter into pieces. So here goes, pathos, absolute pathos. When, during the night, the residents of Gokul heard the news of Akura's arrival, they all lamented profusely in various ways, crying and fainting to the ground. Commentary. The Brajavasis all knew who Akura was and why he had come. They knew he was following Kamsa's orders and was going to try to take Krishna away to Mathura. Yashoda, whose very life was her son, was afraid of wicked Kamsa. She kept Krishna hidden within herself, covering him with her cloth and uttering oaths for his protection. Commentary. Mother Jasoda was aware that it was not easy to keep Krishna hidden. Her only hope was to recite magic incantations. When Nanda Maharaj got up in the morning, Akura convinced him with numerous arguments, and he had his sobbing wife bring Krishna outside. Commentary. Akura reminded Nanda how wicked Kamsa was and convinced him that Krishna was fully capable of dealing with Kamsa. Nanda had no choice but to let Krishna go to the aid of their friends in Mathura. Continuing. This virtually shattered the life airs of the gopis who were watching without shame, crying, "Alas, alas," loudly in agonizing tones. Commentary. By sending Krishna away, Nanda Maharaj was depriving the gopis of their lives. Since Nanda personally escorted Krishna out of the house to the waiting Akura, there was nothing the gopis could do but stare incredulously. Yashoda then came out. Wiping the torrents of tears from her eyes, she took her son's hand and placed it in the hand of the son of Shvapalka, that's Akura, as if giving him to Akura as her property for safekeeping. Commentary. Nyasa, or nikshepa, is an important topic of civil law discussed in Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras. When one person deposits some of his property with another for safekeeping, that is considered a very serious responsibility. Any transgression of this trust, such as the refusal of the second party to return the property, should be punished very severely by the government. Mother Jasoda then told Nanda, I give over to your hand this son, who is more dear to me than life and wealth. Without believing what anyone says, make sure you return him here and give him back into my hand. Commentary. In a tactful way, Yasoda was telling her husband not to trust Akura too much. After making this agreement, Yashoda returned without Krishna to her home. She was so perturbed by the weight of her love for her son that she repeatedly lost consciousness. At this time, a great moaning arose among the women of Braj. Commentary. The women of Braj now lost all hope, seeing that Krishna was actually going to leave. Continuing. Remembering this scene, until today, even stones cry, trees shed watery tears, and lightning bolts fall apart. The whole universe becomes submerged in an ocean of sorrow, at least those souls who do not immediately give up their lives. Simple-hearted Yashoda tried in various ways to console the ladies of Raja, telling them many things. Their minds, however, were totally immersed in a vast ocean of sorrow. They answered her angrily as follows. Commentary. Yashoda assured the ladies that since she had turned her son over to Akrura, the son of a Muni, and Nanda Maharaj, there was no reason to be worried about him. Anything left in deposit with a saintly person can be assured to be safe. I am sure Akrura will come back soon with both Krishna and my husband to return Krishna to my hand. She had no suspicion that Akura might have spoken duplicitously. So the gopis now answer Mother Jasoda with great anger in their voice. Oh, merciless woman, devoid of wisdom, after offering your own calf into the hands of a tiger, how can you enter alone this empty house, which deserves to be burned down? Commentary. Even an unintelligent cow would never willingly allow a tiger to take away her calf. How then could Yashoda offer her son to Kamsa's servant? And after doing so, how can she return by herself to her home, now devoid of Krishna's presence? The ladies criticized her, and the others severely, cursing Akura. In the frenzy of their misery, they came out of their houses, calling out to Lord Krishna. They cried pitifully and ran quickly after him. Commentary. After Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj was the next to receive the ladies' censure. They also blamed the other responsible cowherds for not raising any objection. Translation. These manifold displays of extreme sorrow, insufferable pain and crying, made everyone also cry. Akura and Nanda, Balaram and the cowherds, and even beloved Krishna sitting on the chariot. All the residents of Braja became totally bewildered. Krishna, the life and soul of the young gopis, came to his senses after a moment. Seeing the gopis as if on the verge of death, he got down from the fine chariot to restore them to life. Surrounded by them, he went off, unnoticed, to a forest grove. When Kamsa's courier Apura came back to his normal senses, he saw that Krishna was not in the chariot. Feeling remorse for letting this happen, he tried to win the confidence of Balaram with clever words. He described the unhappiness of Devaki, Vasudeva, and all the Yadavas on Krishna's account alone. The divine son of Rohini and Vasudeva then went with his uncle Akura to search out his younger brother. By certain signs, he was able to locate the grove. Commentary. As a son of Vasudeva by another wife, Balaram is also called Vasudeva. Akura knew that Balaram could hardly tolerate Vasudeva's suffering. And used this as leverage to obtain his help in finding Krishna. Akura was a diplomat. Balaram's father is Vasudeva. So he's addressing him as Vasudeva. Your father, Vasudeva, is in deep trouble. Vasudeva. So you should do something. Let's find Krishna and take just long enough to relieve your father of his difficulty. Then you can come back. Once Balaram agreed to bring Krishna back, it was not hard not far for Balaram to spot Krishna's footprints and follow them to the place where Krishna had gone. Translation. Finding Krishna surrounded by the gopis, his elder brother remained standing some distance away. Akura addressed Krishna directly, telling him the following in a tearful voice. Sriman Akura said, evil Kamsa, constantly harasses your old parents, holding his sword high, ready to kill them. Certainly it is not proper for you to neglect them, your devotees, burdened as they are by fear, sorrow, and pain. Commentary. Akura is trying to impress Krishna that he should not neglect the plight of his helpless elderly parents. There is every chance that Kamsa can kill them. They are terrified of Kamsa, sorrowful due to not seeing their son, and pained by hearing Kamsa's slanderous comments about Krishna. There is no time to delay. Even if Kamsa does not murder them, their distress can kill them soon. He goes on, Akura. The Yadavas have no other shelter than you. All of them are in great distress, their eyes fixed upon the path on which I will come. They are burning in the fire of lamentation and should not have their hopes frustrated. Even the demigods, brahmanas, and other exalted persons live in terror of Kamsa. Commentary. Vasudeva and Devaki are not the only ones who are suffering with no hope for relief other than Krishna. All of the Yadu clan are also in similar situations related to him by family ties as well as by devotion. The Yadus look upon Krishna only for their salvation. They look upon Krishna only for their salvation. They are already in great anxiety that Akura has not yet brought Krishna to Mathura. But if Akura returns without Krishna, they will be devastated. The basic nature of the Yadus' pure love for Krishna is such that they are always Maha Mahartas. Mahartaha. Greatly distressed. And Shukotapta, burning in lamentation. In addition to this, however, they should not have to become hatasha, or deprived of their last hope. Many others besides the Yadava princes depend on Krishna to save them from Kamsa's terror. Including demigods like Indra, learned brahmanas like Garga, and all the cows and Vaishnavas. So, translation continuing. Kamsa, the subduer of demigods, is always bragging about the strength of his own arms. He has no regard for anyone. He is constantly worshipped by powerful demons like himself and by all the royal order. There's one description somewhere where it describes how Kamsa brought all the kings who were assisting him under his rule and under his charge. Some narration where Kamsa one by one engages in personal combat with them and defeats them severely. You know where that's from? So they either have in his demoniac, he was the narration is indicating just how strong Kamsa was. These were very, very, very powerful and terribly fierce demons, kings, and Krishna and Kamsa defeated them. Boom. So they accepted his supremacy, and here it's saying they worshipped him. So Akura is not getting a response from Krishna, so he tries to displace Krishna's compassionate mood with one of anger. In the beginning of this statement, Akura refers to Kamsa simply as Saha, or he. In other words, Kamsa's bad qualities are so numerous and atrocious that they cannot even be mentioned. Kamsa's many demon friends in Mathura help increase his influence, and they share in his arrogance and other bad qualities. Powerful demoniac rulers of other kingdoms like Bana and Bauma also support him. Sri Sarup said, saying this, Akura took blades of grass between his teeth and made numerous plaintive cries. Then that one person named Akura, whose duty was most cruel, offered his obeisances to each of the Vraja women, one by one. Commentary, Krishna still did not come out of the Kunja. Knowing that Krishna is the controller, Krishna is controlled by his dearest devotees, Akura appealed to the gopis. He approached them with all humility he could muster. This was not easy, because his name means not cruel. His duty of conveying Krishna to Mathura was the most cruel thing anyone could do to the gopis. So, Akura addresses the gopis. Please do not become the cause of death of the descendants of the Yadu dynasty and for the whole world. Please have mercy on them. Dear goddesses, please help protect Krishna's poor parents who are imprisoned by Kamsa. So I can anticipate, I haven't read this, but I know what they're going to say. What are you talking about, Krishna's parents? Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna's parents. We know who Krishna's parents are. Nanda and Yashoda. What is this double talk? You're just a diplomat. So, commentary. Everyone was afraid of Kamsa, including the cowherds of Braj. If Krishna did not come very soon to Mathura, the lives of many innocent persons would be at risk, and the first to be killed might well be Vasudeva and Devaki. The gopis should therefore be merciful by giving their consent to Krishna's departure and their blessings for an auspicious trip. The divine gopis said, Oh, you great cheat, speaker of falsehoods, follower of Kamsa, how is that you two mention that the two you mention are Krishna's parents? These two boys are the son of Nanda and Yashoda. Please do not become the murderer of Gokula. Do not become a killer of women. Commentary. Why the gopis labeling Swapalkya Muni's son as a great cheat and liar? Because he is the follower of Kamsa. In a way, the gopis are correct to say that Vasudeva and Devaki are not Krishna's parents. What they really are is his unalloyed devotees. Acting as his parents is just a role they accept for his service. Don't kill the people of Gokula, and especially don't become a killer of women. By this, the gopis mean to tell Akrura that he need not be so concerned over Vasudeva and Devaki. The possibility of their being killed lies in the future, and measures to prevent this tragedy can still be taken. This, therefore, should not be Akrura's immediate concern. There is the imminent threat, however. Of Akrura becoming the direct cause of the death of the inhabitants of Gokula. Oops. Including cows and women. This can happen not in the indefinite future, but very soon. Akrura should think twice before committing these terrible sins. Sri Sarup said, hearing about the activities of wicked Kamsa and about the misery of his family members caused by him, Krishna came out from the grove, apologized to the gopis, and showed his anger and sadness. He could see that Balaram was agreeing with Akrura. Krishna is torn by different moods of different devotees who have different positions, and somehow Krishna has to reciprocate and satisfy all of them. Krishna's anger was directed solely at Kamsa. The sorrow he felt was for his own faultless devotees. He interpreted his older brother's silence as an indication that Lord Balaram accepted Akrura's proposal to take them to Madhupuri. At that, Akrura was overjoyed. With Balaram's permission, Krishna quickly left the grove and ran back to bring the chariot there. So this is not Akrura. As the gopis ascertained that Krishna was about to leave for the city, they stared constantly at his lotus face. Frightened of the impending fire of separation, they cried and spoke to Krishna, falling at his lotus feet. Commentary. It might seem audacious for the gopis to address Krishna so boldly in public, but they were afraid of burning up in the fire of separation. Other devotees besides the gopis also
sometimes frankly express their agony to Krishna in the presence of others, as we hear from the wives of the Vedic Brahmanas in the Bhagavatam's 10th canto. Here the wives of the Brahmanas say to Krishna publicly, "O Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away with your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships." So the gopis are now speaking to Krishna. "O Master, because we have no shelter, we cannot live for even a fraction of a second without you. Please do not abandon us, your maidservants, O Lord. Just take us along wherever you go. On account of you, the forest is our home, and our homes are like forests. Our antagonists become friends, and our friends become enemies. Poison is sweet, and nectar is poison. Without you, we will die." Commentary. If Krishna will not acquiesce to their prayer, the gopis will die very quickly. Krishna has turned everything in their lives upside down. The forest has become their